10 years ago, just after the Supreme Court's Citizens United decision, much was said about the dystopian electoral future awaiting us. Here was Keith Olbermann, MSNBC, 2010.
In short, the First Amendment, free speech for persons, which went into effect in 1791, applies to corporations. There are now no checks on the ability of corporations or unions or other giant aggregations of power to decide our elections. None.
Whether Citizens United really turned out that way is worth a closer look, but it has remained emblematic of perverse corporate influence and corrupted politics, and a common enemy in an otherwise contentious democratic field.
It is hardly a democracy if Citizens United means that dollars can drown out the will of the people.
We will fight to reverse Citizens United so big corporations can't buy our elections.
Together, we are going to overturn Citizens United.
I agree the way to deal with Citizens United is pass a constitutional amendment. I introduced 20.
Despite all the public acrimony over that ominous Supreme Court decision, just about every presidential candidate is currently benefiting from it. Most notably by skirting old fundraising restrictions with the help of super political action committees, or super PACs.
Super PACs didn't exist until Citizens United, but the spending by these organizations has really exploded in the last 10 years.
Sarah Briner is Director of Research and Strategy with the Center for Responsive Politics.
It allows for very wealthy people to make millions of dollars in contributions, and then the PAC can spend unlimited amounts of money supporting candidates.
Not to say that all the Democratic hopefuls are financed the same way. As we've heard, they each use their fundraising philosophies to signal variously their virtue or electability or broad base of support. And so it's complicated to sort out for media audiences and for journalists themselves, because none of these issues is as pat as the candidates' glib accusations of hypocrisy and moral trespass. Just for instance, at the New Hampshire debate earlier this month, Elizabeth Warren claimed financial purity.
If you really want to live where you say, then put your money where your mouth is and say no to the PACs.
But now it turns out a super PAC is supporting her in the Nevada primary. So is she busted?
Super PACs are by design and sort of legally required to be separate from campaign committees and politicians. So she can't say, you can't have the super PAC. That's not up to her. In fact, if she were to say that, that would be running afoul of anti-coordination rules.
And there's a lot of wink, wink, nudge, nudge going on coordination, and always has been.
Absolutely. And even beyond that, Barack Obama, the super PAC that supported him, Priorities USA, hired his high-profile staff after they left his campaign. Mitch McConnell is famous for putting out hours of B-roll of him smiling at the camera for public use on YouTube so that super PAC allies could take it and make it look as though it was coming from McConnell himself.
That's probably just a big coincidence.
Yeah, exactly. Sometimes campaigns put out press releases really for the benefit of the super PAC so that they can be sharing messaging. So certainly Warren is going to condemn the super PAC because she's been so vehemently anti-super PAC in the past. Nobody cares that Trump has a super PAC supporting him, and nobody really cares that Joe Biden has a super PAC supporting him because he's never made a big deal about that in the past, and so he doesn't look like a hypocrite to the same degree that Warren or even Sanders would.
Bernie Sanders on Wednesday had to explain dark money contributions made out to his own war chest.
Yes. And Sanders has been supported by super PACs in the past. He claims that these are different from your other super PACs because they are funded through grassroots donations. They're not different. A super PAC is a super PAC is a super PAC. It's really up to the public to decide how much they care whether the super PAC is brought to you by Michael Bloomberg or brought to you by thousands of nurses.
Well, you mentioned the super PACs of nurses. Are small donations from just plain folks inherently better than super PAC money from a righteous source?
I think that when it comes to potential nefarious influence on policy outcomes, I think that they probably are. Because you can't say to a politician, hey, I gave you $5, can you write me an exception to the tariff law? Whereas support by a billionaire could really make or break your campaign. And even though you are going to say, I'm not beholden to Sheldon Adelson or Bloomberg or what have you, you might be more likely to grant them a meeting or bring them to your house for supper, that kind of thing. And so I think that that's more problematic, yes.
And that's just what happened to Pete Buttigieg, who has been excoriated for cozying up to rich patrons.
Buttigieg took criticism for his high-dollar closed-door fundraisers, including one held in a wine cave in Northern California.
Which he won't apologize over because he says the only consideration is beating Donald Trump in November. Trump has tens of millions of dollars coming in from big donors, and why should the Democratic nominee, whoever that should be, go into the general election with one arm tied behind his back? Is he wrong?
I think the Buttigieg statements are a preview of coming attractions for whoever ends up as the Democratic nominee, because the Democratic National Committee would never let the Democratic nominee skate without that backup.
Now, I'm sorry for burying the lead, but most of the opprobrium about dirty money at Wednesday's debate was directed at the one guy not taking a dime from anyone.
Mike Bloomberg owns more wealth than the bottom 125 million Americans. That's wrong. That's immoral.
I don't think you look at Donald Trump and say, we need someone richer in the White House.
Democrats take a huge risk if we just substitute one arrogant billionaire for another.
The accusation is he's a billionaire trying to buy the nomination, which is fair enough. $400 million so far. And I think that's just in 10 weeks. But he's also not taking fossil fuel money, pharma money. Is Bloomberg the apotheosis of the perversion of money in politics, or is he actually the antidote?
I don't think that billionaires running for president is something that we should view as the solution to all our money and politics problems. And Bloomberg, I think, certainly he's going to claim, like, I didn't get any money from fossil fuel. But his wealth allows him to run a different kind of campaign, allows him to set the narrative through his commercials. The reaction to Bloomberg in Wednesday's debate has been very negative in the media I've been reading. But most people don't watch debates, and everybody watches commercials, and he just has so many more of them than anyone else. So I think that he's banking on being able to really control what people are seeing, even if he isn't necessarily in the pocket of anyone else. He's in his own pocket and he has his own interests.
So let's get back to where we began with Citizens United, which is the big bogeyman of the campaign finance question. Has it turned out that Olbermann was right? Is Citizens United the central player in this presidential process?
Most money in the political system still comes from individual donors in limited amounts. That's still the dominant source of funds for most people. But the role of these outside spending organizations like super PACs and then also the nonprofits, which are also an offshoot of Citizens United, have increased and play a really important role in a lot of these really close races. We now have many Senate and House races where outside spending organizations are spending more than the candidate committees, which means that the candidate and certainly the parties are operating in a different game than the super PACs.
One group that doesn't seem to be in the thick of it is actually the very corporations who Citizens United imbued with humanity.
Yes. People were worried that corporations are people now, and so they are going to be the main donors to political entities. That is very much not true. Very few publicly traded corporations and certainly sort of blue chip and retail focused corporations donate directly to super PACs. And those that do tend to be things like oil and gas companies that don't have a consumer base to the same degree that something like Walmart or Target does. If you have customers, you don't want to alienate half of them by supporting a candidate that they a bore. So I think that that has limited the amount we see from corporations directly. What really has happened instead is that very wealthy individuals who are generally unknown to the public have stepped into the political game in a very dramatic way, funneling hundreds of millions of dollars to super PACs. Is that better? I don't think so. I think that that still runs the risk of undue influence by these rich people. It's just not the kind of consequence that people were talking about when the case was decided.
I wonder, as we're watching the process play out in the primaries, and as we watch the candidates snipe at one another about each other's perceived compromises, what should we most be paying attention to?
I think that what is my number one concern in the 2020 campaign is the fact that there's two things. The FEC, the Federal Election Commission, doesn't have a quorum right now, so they can't do any kind of enforcement activity. If there's a donation that comes in and it's unclear who that donation is from, typically the FEC could ask the campaign to provide more information and then issue a fine if the campaign was receiving it in a way that sort of violated the law. They can't do that right now. So that's a problem. But the bigger problem is that even though we have a watchdog organization in the FEC and then watchdog organizations like mine, you get donations to these super PACs from groups that are LLC miscellaneous, registered in Delaware a couple months ago, no paper trail, no knowledge about who these are. These could be foreign actors very easily. And given the role that foreign money played, or people think that it may have played in the 2016 election, I would be deeply concerned that a lot of this is going to skirt by because we don't have proper enforcement.
And I guess I'll ask you one last question. From your perspective, of the candidates who appeared on the stage in Nevada on Wednesday, who is the one who has the most splaining to do?
I actually don't think any of them. These are all minor transgressions. I think Bloomberg is strange because he is self-funding so lavishly. I think Sanders has already justified his super PAC. I think Biden and Buttigieg and Klobuchar never really ran as populist as Sanders and Warren. And I think that Warren, you know, when she ran for Senate, she did an interesting thing, the first time I've ever seen this happen, where her and her opponent both disavowed super PACs and promised to pay the other candidate money if the super PAC spent on their behalf, in effect sort of neutering the super PAC's ability to spend in that race. So she really in the past has walked the walk, but I think that now she's in a position where she is going to need to be on the defensive just because of her past rhetoric.
Sarah, thank you so much.
No problem.
Sarah Briner is the research director with the Center for Responsive Politics. Coming up, they say history is written by the victors. And also, it turns out, just disappeared. This is On the Media.